Newsflash. There's a meteor shower tonight. See shooting stars from your very own house. Up to 100 meteors per hour shooting across the sky. Oh my gosh, it's gonna be so good. Have you read about this? It's clickable, that's for sure, because you think, all right, shooting stars, meteor shower, this is awesome. We're going to have the Lyrids coming up in April. It's going to be like Laser Floyd, everything shooting across the sky. See, this is where I have to bring everybody down. I have to be the buzzkill astronomer because, no, you will not see 100 meteors per hour. I don't care what the internet says. I don't care what the NASA scientist that's quoted on the internet thing says. It's not going to happen. Why am I such a downer? Why do I dislike meteor showers? Well, I guess we got to talk about that. From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm your host, Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up. The show that takes you deep into the cosmos or just to the telescope in your backyard to learn more about what makes this amazing universe of ours so great. My guest today is Noreen Grice, the founder of You Can Do Astronomy, and for over 40 years has made astronomy more accessible to everyone.
It is set for this weekend, the best time to catch this dazzling display.
Perseids is one of the more active meteor showers of the year, seeing about 60 shooting stars.
All right, so why do meteor showers drive me so crazy? It's because it gets people's expectations really high.
Dozens streaking across the night sky, and it is intense, the intense meteor shower.
One of the most active meteor showers of the year.
I've gone out to so many late nights looking for shooting stars, and so many late nights I've come in cold, disappointed, tired, because you think in your mind there's going to be like shooting stars every minute, every 2 minutes.
10 to 50 per hour, even more than that.
And I go out there and all these NASA people are like, yeah, you're going to see 100 an hour.
Producing up to 120 meteors per hour.
And I wait for like a half hour and I see one, maybe two on a good day.
And did you say somebody already started seeing?
A friend of mine in Santa Barbara said, yeah. Ooh, great meteor.
Well, what's going on here? Well, meteor showers are notoriously fickle beasts. We can't predict them with any good certainty. But I don't want to like totally downplay these things because shooting stars are really cool to see. And you can see them at any particular day if you're out there, if you wait long enough, of course. But what we have coming up in April is a meteor shower that happens every year called the Lyrids. And they peak around April 22nd or 23rd. But you can see some stray Lyrids a couple days before, a couple days after that. Good news, this happens in April where the weather is usually a little warmer and you can stay up a little later and be comfortable. The moon is not going to be in the way, so moonlight will wash out some of the fainter meteors. Bad news, Lyrids are just kind of so-so as a meteor showers go. The Perseids are a lot better, usually the Orionids or the Geminids, that kind of thing. Am I telling you don't go out and look for the Lyrids? Absolutely not. You see a couple shooting stars, maybe you'll be like, oh, cool. But really, the big show is to get out and, well, enjoy the spring sky because you got warmer weather. You can stay outside and watch the sky. I know you're not going to see shooting stars. Just put that away. You're not going to see very many of them. But you will see lots of other stars out there. And we're in this period of time where we're kind of transitioning from the bright stars and constellations of winter into the kind of more subtle ones of spring. So meteor showers. Okay, just use it as an excuse to get out there and watch some stars, identify some new stars and constellations. If you see one shooting star, you're like, woo, call it a good night, that's for sure. So this is just one way to get into astronomy. We got some other ways we want to talk about and some ways you can even touch the stars.
My name is Noreen Grice. I have a consulting company called You Can Do Astronomy, LLC. Where I make astronomy more accessible to students with disabilities and different learning styles, and especially for people who are blind or visually impaired.
Well, Noreen, thanks so much for joining me today.
I'm so happy to be here.
So astronomy seems like such a visual field. What did you find it was like for people who are blind or visually impaired to study astronomy back when you first started?
Well, back when I first started, I wasn't thinking about it at all. So I had just started working at the Boston Museum of Science and the Charles Hayden Planetarium, And maybe I was on the job for like a month or so, and I was taking tickets for the next planetarium show, and there was a group of blind people in line. And I didn't know what to do, so I asked the manager, who was an older gentleman, what do I do? There's blind people in line. And he said, just help them to their seats. That's all you have to do. So I did that, and then I went into the console and welcomed everyone to the planetarium. And I pressed the button on the Apple IIe computer to start the pre-recorded show. And then my job was to sit there and move the star projector around a little bit. And then at the end of the show, thank people for coming to the planetarium.
When you look up at the sky on a clear night, what do you see? There's the moon and the stars.
I was looking at that group of people during the program, and I wondered what they were thinking. So when the show was over and they were coming in my direction, I came around and I asked them how they liked the show. Now, I expected they'd probably say, yeah, it was okay. But that's not what they said. They said, that stunk, and walked away. And it was like somebody like threw a brick at me. This is the most wonderful place in the world. What happened? That moment in time just stuck with me. And I felt like I really had to understand what went wrong. And I took the bus over to the Perkins School for the Blind. And I found the library there. I walked around and I asked the librarian if they had any astronomy books. And the librarian directed me to a bookshelf with very large books, very thick. And I took one down and I was flipping through the pages and I saw it had Braille. And I said, do any of these books have like raised pictures that you can touch? And the librarian said, not very many Braille books have raised pictures because they're very expensive and very time consuming to make. And then it occurred to me, oh, the planetarium was not a great experience because the images were projected on the dome overhead. They were not accessible. And that planetarium show, the narration was something like, and over here is the Big Dipper, and over there is Saturn, you know, and it wasn't even descriptive. And so I started to understand, well, it wasn't accessible, and I don't know how to fix this, but I'm going to try. And that moment in time back in 1984 started me on this journey to create a world of accessible astronomy.
Well, it sounds like a very daunting challenge and probably one that would take a lot of creativity. So what did you come up with and what worked and what didn't at first?
I didn't know what to do. Remember, I went over and talked to an elderly woman who worked at the Massachusetts Association for the Blind. And she said, to make raised pictures, you should glue string to cardboard. Now, I don't know. It didn't sound too promising back in 1984. And I also was fooling around with Play-Doh and things like that. That didn't work very well. But I decided I'm going to try to figure this out. I went to back to the Perkins School for the Blind, and they actually were selling these etching kits and plastic pages. And so just with hand tools, I would be sitting at the desk at the planetarium trying to draw out the rings of Saturn and the phases of the moon, because I wanted to have different pictures to go along with different planetarium shows. And I needed to test them also. So I ended up going to a blind student and showing them the pictures. Now, I was quite proud of like my Big Dipper. And I even put a caption below it. I had like a little template that had print words and Braille. And the first thing the person said was, why does this picture have all letter A's on it? And I was like, what do you mean about that? I don't understand. And the student said, in Braille, one dot is the letter A. If you're putting dots on a page, it looks like the letter A, unless you tell me it's not. So here I was making stars, but they look like alphabet soup on the page. And if you're going to use a dot for a star, you need to have a key, and you need to put that dot equals a star. And so I was making a bunch of mistakes, but it was great because I learned so much from the mistakes that my pictures got a lot better.
I mean, it's like hilarious that they'd be feeling this and saying, all the planets are A's? What's going on here? So you get these initial reactions, but then what were some of the ones that were like real positive that you thought, okay, I'm on the right track here?
So, you know, the planetarium was not accessible to Museum of Science, and a lot of things were behind glass cases. And it seemed like if there was a person who was blind who accompanied somebody to the museum, some of the staff may have looked the other way because they didn't know what to do and they didn't want to do something that was wrong. So what I started to do was seeking out blind people who came to the museum. if I heard there's a blind visitor, where's that person? And I would run down there with my pictures and I'd say, could you help me? I'm trying to make these tactile pictures. Could you look at them with me? And every time the person would say, yeah, let's sit down and take a look. And we'd feel the pictures together. And also, I started to get some small grants to do like recorded guided tours of the Museum of Science. And I was able to get people to volunteer to help go through the tours with me, people who are blind. And they were just really happy that there was some positive efforts to making the museum more accessible, especially in the planetarium where that wasn't even considered a place that was welcoming for people who were non-visual learners.
Well, and then fast forward a little bit farther, and you're the author of several tactile astronomy books. What are some of your favorites, and which ones have you seen that have had the most impact?
When I was starting to make these tactile pictures for the museum, and I was going into my senior year at Boston University, I went to my professors, and I said, I would like to do a directed study. I would like to write a book for the blind. All of a sudden, the room got quiet, and you could hear a paperclip drop, you know. I think he thought, I've never heard anything like that. But that was the beginning of the first book, Touch the Stars. And so during my senior year, I wrote the text for Touch the Stars. I couldn't quite get how to mass produce the tactile images. But after I came back from grad school and I returned to the Museum of Science, then things really picked up. I was able to get on a grant, a Braille embosser. I was able to start making the pictures. I had the text, and the Museum of Science published the first edition of Touch the Stars. With very little promotion, I think we made, it was either 200 or 400 copies, and they sold out. And as time was going on, I was creating new images, and they would get added into the new version. Well, we're currently in the fifth edition, and National Braille Press has taken over publication of that. And where I started out with a handful of images, we've got over 100 pages of text, which has print and Braille on it, and 19 tactile images. Touch the Stars is like an introductory astronomy book that would be good for, you know, anyone who is age 8 and up, because it has all sorts of typical astronomy images you'd be thinking about. Planets, constellations, eclipses, moon phases, galaxies, nebulae, you know, so you can learn about astronomy and you can feel your way through. A person who is sighted can read the book because it's got print on it. A person who is a non-visual learner can feel the Braille and read it too, and together enjoy the pictures. And so Touch the Stars has been really the foundation of all my astronomy books.
Your latest book is also a digital book called Touch the Solar System. Tell us more about that and what advances in technology are kind of helping to bring more astronomy to people.
Right. So this book, Touch the Solar System, uses a device called the Talking Tactile Tablet, or T3. The book will basically come alive as you're touching different places. There are different layers of information. So you can be, say, touching the Great Red Spot on Jupiter, and it'll tell you about it, and then there'll be a little tone to tell you there's more information. So if you touch again, you can go deeper and deeper. It's something that would, I think, be great in a classroom or in a library or in a museum. I think people will really like it.
Thanks, Noreen, for talking with us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me. That's been really fun.
So over the past year, I've been working with the Clovernook Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired on a new astronomy book. Clovernook's printing house, it's located in Cincinnati. It's the largest in the country, producing more than 30 million pages of Braille every year. And so I went to them with this idea of a book, and my topic and my title of my book is called All About Orion, my favorite constellation. I worked with the team to, you know, write up a story about Orion. I did a little bit of the mythology, but mostly I wanted to show how the stars are laid out and that people could like touch them and feel the outlines of the constellations. And so it was really fun working with this team to produce Orion in like this 3D format. So there was an event that Clovernook did called the Braille Challenge, and they had me come in to kind of field test the book with a group of kids who are visually impaired and blind. And we were going through the book and I was telling them the story behind Orion and the mythology. And one of the girls that was sitting next to me, I was telling the story, you know, the myth is crazy about Orion. And she's like, this story's so weird. I was like, yeah, it is weird. So you got that right. But then there's a page of the book where I have just stars, a star field that's raised up and tactile, and they're supposed to guess which constellation it is. So it's part of the book, use your imagination. And the constellation it's supposed to be is Ursa Major, the big dog. And so when I'm showing this to the students, I'm like thinking, oh man, what are they going to think it is? Thankfully, first person that said something out loud was, it's a dog. I was like, it is a dog. Oh my gosh, it's a dog. You're right. Oh, so this is why you field test this stuff. And so it's really fun to work with this audience. And they're so excited to be able to like learn astronomy in this way. Boy, I'm really nervous, but I need to send a copy to Noreen too and see what she thinks. It was so great talking to her. She was an inspiration for the book as well. I'm hoping All About Orion will be coming out shortly. It should be out any day now. So look for it in Braille and text coming out this spring. Looking Up with Dean Regas is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds and I created the podcast in 2017. Ella Rowan and Marshall Verbsky produce and edit our show and get totally mad at me personally when every meteor shower they see underperforms. It's not my fault. I didn't say it was going to be any good. Janelle Walton is our vice president of content, and Ronnie Salerno is our digital platforms manager. Our theme song is Possible Light by Ziv Moran. Our social media coordinator is Hannah McFarlane, and our cover art is by Nicole Tiffany. I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.